Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode from Sri Aurobindo, Synthesis of Yoga. We observe first that there exists in India a remarkable yogic system which is in its nature synthetic and starts from a great central principle of nature, a great dynamic, force of nature. But it is a yoga apart, not a synthesis of other schools. This system is the way of the Tantra. Now, owing to certain of its developments, Tantra has fallen into discredit with those who are not tantrics, and especially owing to the developments of its left-hand path, the Vama Marga, which, not content with exceeding the duality of virtue and sin, and instead of replacing them by spontaneous rightness of action, seemed, sometimes, to make a method of self-indulgence, a method of unrestrained social immorality. Nevertheless, in its origin, Tantra was a great and puissant system founded upon ideas which were at least partially true. Even its twofold division into the right-hand and left-hand paths, Dakshina Marga and Vama Marga, started from a certain profound perception. In the ancient symbolic sense of the words Dakshina and Vama, it was the distinction between the way of knowledge and the way of Ananda. Nature and man liberating itself by right discrimination in power and practice of its own energies, elements and potentialities, and nature in man liberating itself by joyous acceptance in power and practice of its own energies, elements, and potentialities. But in both paths, there was in the end an obscuration of principles, a deformation of symbols, and a fall. If, however, we leave aside here also the actual methods and practices and seek for the central principle, we find first that Tantra expressly differentiates itself from the Vedic methods of yoga. In a sense, all the schools we have hitherto examined are Vedantic in their principle. Their force is in knowledge. Their method is knowledge, though it is not always discernment by the intellect, but maybe instead the knowledge of the heart, expressed in love and faith, or a knowledge in the will, working out through action. In all of them, the Lord of the Yoga is the Purusha, the conscious soul that knows, observes, attracts, governs. But in Tantra, it is rather Prakriti, the nature soul, the energy, the will in power, executive in the universe. It was by learning and applying the intimate secrets of this will in power, its method, its Tantra, that the Tantric yogin pursued the aims of his discipline: mastery, perfection, liberation, beatitude. Instead of drawing back from manifested nature and its difficulties, he confronted them, seized them, and conquered. But in the end, as is the general tendency of Prakriti, Tantric yoga largely lost its principle in its machinery and became a thing of formulae, an occult mechanism, still powerful when rightly used, but fallen from the clarity of the original intention. We have in the central Tantric conception one side of the truth, the worship of the energy, the Shakti, as the sole effective force for all attainment. We get the other extreme in the Vedantic conception of the Shakti as a power of illusion, and in the search after the silent, inactive Purusha, is the means of liberation from the deceptions created by the active energy. But in the integral conception, the conscious soul is the Lord. The nature soul is its executive energy. Purusha is of the nature of Sat, the being of conscious self-existence, pure, infinite. Shakti, or Prakriti, is of the nature of Chit. It is the power of the Purusha's self-conscious existence, pure, infinite. The relation of the two exists between the poles of rest and action. When the energy is absorbed in the bliss of conscious self-existence, there is rest. When the Purusha pours itself out in the action of its energy, there is action, creation, and the enjoyment or ananda of becoming. But if ananda is the creator and begetter of all becoming, its method is tapas, force of the Purusha's consciousness, dwelling upon its own infinite potentiality in existence, and producing from it truths of conception, or the real ideas, vijnana, which, proceeding from an omniscient and omnipotent self-existence, have the surety of their own fulfillment, and contain in themselves the nature and law of their own becoming in the terms of mind, life, and matter. The eventual omnipotence of tapas and the infallible fulfillment of the idea are in fact the very foundation of all yoga. In man, we render these terms by will and faith, a will that is eventually self-effected because it is of the substance of knowledge, and a faith that is the reflex in the lower consciousness of a truth or real idea yet unrealized in the manifestation. It is this self-certainty of the idea which is meant by the Gita when it says, "Whatever is a man's faith, or the sure idea in him, that he becomes." So we see then, from what the psychological point of view, and yoga is nothing but practical psychology, is the conception of nature from which we have to start. It is the self-fulfillment of the Purusha through his energy. But the movement of nature is twofold, higher and lower, or as we may choose to term it, divine and undivine. The distinction exists indeed for practical purposes only, for there is nothing that is not divine. And in a larger view, it is as meaningless verbally as the distinction between natural and supernatural. For all things that are natural. All things are in nature, and all things are in God. But for practical purposes, there is a real distinction. The lower nature, that which we know and are, and must remain so long as the faith in us is not changed, acts through limitation and division, is of the nature of ignorance, and culminates in the life of the ego. But the higher nature, that to which we aspire, acts by unification and transcendence of limitation, is of the nature of knowledge, and culminates in the life divine. The passage from the lower to the higher is the aim of yoga. And this passage may affect itself by the rejection of the lower and escape into the higher. The ordinary viewpoint, or by the transformation of the lower and its elevation to the higher nature. It is this, rather, that must be the aim of an integral yoga. But in either case, It is always through something in the lower that we must rise into the higher existence. In the schools of yoga, each select their own point of departure or their own gate of escape. They specialize certain activities of the lower Prakriti and turn them towards the divine. But the normal action of nature in us is an integral movement in which the full complexity of all our elements is affected by and affects all our environments. The whole of life is the yoga of nature. The yoga that we seek must also be an integral action of nature. And the whole difference between the yogin and the natural man will be this, that the yogin seeks to substitute in himself for the integral action of the lower nature, working in and by ego and division, the integral action of the higher nature, working in and by God and unity. If indeed our aim be only an escape from the world to God, well, synthesis is unnecessary and a waste of time. For then our sole practical aim must be to find out one path out of the thousand that lead to God, one shortest possible of shortcuts, and not to linger exploring different paths that end in the same goal. But if our aim be a transformation of our integral being into the terms of God existence, it is then that a synthesis becomes necessary. The method we have to pursue, then, is to put our whole conscious being into relation and contact with the divine, and to call him in, to transform our entire being into his. Thus, in a sense, God himself, the real person in us, becomes the sadhaka of the sadhana as well as the master of the yoga, by whom the lower personality is used as the center of a divine transfiguration and the instrument of its own perfection. In effect, the pressure of the tapas, the force of consciousness in us, dwelling in the idea of the divine nature upon that which we are in our entirety, produces its own realization. The divine and all-knowing and all-affecting descends upon the limited and obscure, progressively illumines and energizes the whole lower nature, and substitutes its own action for all the terms of the inferior human light and mortal activity. Now, in psychological fact, this method translates itself into the progressive surrender of the ego with its whole field and all its apparatus to the beyond ego, with its vast and incalculable but always inevitable workings. Certainly, this is no shortcut or easy sadhana. It requires a colossal faith, an absolute courage, and above all, an unflinching patience. For it implies three stages of which only the last can be wholly blissful or rapid. The attempt of the ego to enter into contact with the divine, the wide, full, and therefore laborious preparation of the whole lower nature by the divine working to receive and become the higher nature, and the eventual transformation. In fact, however, the divine strength, often unobserved and behind the veil, substitutes itself for our weakness and supports us through all our failings of faith, courage, and patience. It makes the blind to see and the lame to stride over the hills. The intellect becomes aware of a law that beneficently insists and a succor that upholds. The heart speaks of a master of all things and friend of man. or a universal mother who upholds through all stumblings. Therefore, this path is at once the most difficult imaginable, and yet, in comparison with the magnitude of its effort and object, the most easy and sure of all. We're going to pause at this point for today. And I want to read just a couple lines from Savitri, Book 6, Canto 2. O mortal, bear this great world's law of pain. In thy hard passage through a suffering world, lean for thy soul's support on heaven's strength. Turn towards high truth, aspire for love and peace. A little bless is lent thee from above, a touch divine upon thy human days. Make of thy daily way a pilgrimage, for through small joys and griefs thou movest towards God. Thank you so much for tuning into Auroville Radio. Until the next episode, Marlenka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.